The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome back to Science Weekly with me, Ian Sample. Coming up on the show, should we be doing more to protect people from dodgy drugs? Clubbers have been warned of the dangers of PMA and PMMA, potentially lethal chemicals that have been missold as ecstasy but have a greater risk of overdose. Is David Nutt right when he says it's a direct consequence of our drugs policy? Also on the show, we have our picks from the week's science news, including a second take on rising sea levels and what happened to Britain's Beagle 2 Mars lander. This is Science Weekly from The Guardian. Four recent deaths in Britain have been linked to a fatal batch of drugs inscribed on both sides with a Superman-style S and containing a high level of PMMA instead of MDMA or ecstasy. According to the government's former drugs advisor David Nutt, these incidents are a direct consequence of international attempts to prohibit the production and sale of MDMA by banning a number of precursor chemicals. The ban led drugs manufacturers to find an alternative precursor, and the one they hit on was aniseed oil, which produces PMA or PMMA instead of MDMA when you do the same chemistry. Now, these chemicals have some similar effects to ecstasy, but they work more slowly, causing users to take additional doses when they don't get the quick hit they might expect. PMA and PMMA also cause a toxic reaction that elevates body temperature to a dangerous, sometimes lethal level. According to Professor Nutt, this is another example of the prohibition of one drug leading to a greater harm from an alternative. Instead of a ban, he advocates drug testing facilities for users with no threat of prosecution and the publication of test results from seized tablets to empower users to make informed decisions about their drug taking. But what is the real risk that drug users are exposing themselves to? And is there more we should be doing to protect them from whatever dodgy drugs reach the market? I'm joined down the line by Dan van der Gouw, a researcher at the Trimbos Institute in the Netherlands, and by John Ramsey, director of TicTac, a drug identification service in London. Welcome to you both.
Yes, hello.
John, can you first tell us what are PMA and PMMA?
Well, PMMA is paramethoxymethylamphetamine, and PMA is paramethoxyamphetamine. These are both derivatives of known stimulant drugs, amphetamine and methylamphetamine. So they're chemically very similar, but they're much more toxic than either of those two parent compounds.
Why are we seeing pills that contain really high levels of PMMA on the market now? There have been pills with small amounts and certainly deaths in the UK attributed to PMMA. Why are we now seeing this, or have seen this high-level drug suddenly appear?
I think it's a complete mystery. I mean, I don't see why we see either of these compounds. They're known to be toxic by the manufacturers and they're known to be toxic by the consumers. So I can't imagine why anybody would want them or why anybody would make them and sell them.
What does it do to you, first of all? Because it sounds like they have a different chemical action to MDMA that they're being passed off as.
I don't think the action is very different. I think it's more profound. Both compounds cause a serotonin syndrome. And I think if a clinician was to treat a poisoning with either of them, the main difference is the severity. The symptoms and everything that happens are pretty similar, but PMMA and PMA are much more likely to cause the severe reactions that have resulted in these deaths.
Dan, let's bring you in. Your organisation first detected these pills in December. Take us through what happened. How did you become aware of them?
So we have this testing facility in the Netherlands, this testing systems, over 30 places where people can have their drugs tested on content. And through our regular testing, we discovered a tablet, a pink Superman double-sided logo. And then when the results came up, we found out that it contained 173 milligrams of PMMA and also a little bit of amphetamines. And, this was very worrisome because, it's a lethal doses. And so it was found and detected through our regular system. And upon that, we thought it was high time to issue a full-blown red alert, as we call it, a warning, just right before the Christmas season took off.
So you got this alert at your lab on the 18th of December, I believe. So just when a lot of people are beginning to wind down for Christmas, and presumably you see a lot of people arriving in the Netherlands, there's a lot of partying going on. Presumably you see a rise in drug use.
Exactly. So this was the case. And also our lab was closed during the Christmas season. So we thought it would be very wise to make a full-blown warning for this specific tablet, since we also had intelligence that it was around in other parts of the country and maybe even abroad.
So you had already picked up through other sources some sense that this was a problem on the streets of the Netherlands.
Yes, exactly. But still, we have no incidents so far. But it's a lethal dosage, so it's just time to it's just waiting for accidents to happen, and they happened in the UK.
What is the form of the alert that you can issue in the Netherlands? How do you get the message to people?
We have very good contacts with media, so what we did was to send out a press release, and it was picked up immediately by all sorts of press, and especially by the two Dutch news shows that were on every night. And so they provided the logo, the exact logo, and some additional information from us, and it was on the news everywhere. It was even a press alert, and so it was impossible not to hear about this issue. By doing so, nobody would want to buy a tablet like that or even swallow a tablet like that, so the product becomes completely unsellable, and this is probably what happened over the last few weeks.
Do you think that alert that you issued in the Netherlands essentially removed the pill from the market there?
Exactly. This is also our aim with an alert like this, to get it off the market as quickly as possible, because it's again, it's lethal.
It's an interesting system you have over there, whereby people are allowed to send in a sample of the drugs that they have bought, and then a few days later, a week later, they can get some kind of knowledge back on what that drug is if it can't be identified on the spot. Is that the sort of optimal way of doing this, do you think, of preventing deaths like the ones we've seen in England?
Well, at least for our country, it works quite well. And if you would extrapolate it to the UK, if you want to have nationwide places where people can just deliver the samples for analysis, it's beneficial for the drug users themselves, obviously, but also for the society in general, because it helps to prevent people from drug-related incidents, and there are many. So, it would be very effective for the UK also to set up a similar system.
You must have faced a slightly tricky situation in that these pills, these PMMA pills, the lethal one that you tested, looked very similar to a very popular pill already on the market that is high in MDMA.
Exactly. There's two variants of these tablets. One is a double-sided logo. So on both sides, there's the S sign, and it's double-sided. This one is the PMMA tablet. But there's also another one on the market, which is only one side logo, and the other side is flat with a breaking curve, or I don't know how you call that. And this tablet contains only MDMA, and so no PMMA at all.
Why do you think they arrived in the Netherlands? Do you think they were homegrown there, they were produced there? And why do you think they were made in the first place?
It's possible that it's from the Netherlands, because we're the world's number one producer of ecstasy, so it's possible that it's from the Netherlands. And again, as was discussed before, why, we really don't know. Probably it's an idiot who has no idea how to produce PMMA. And if he's not an idiot, he should be punished, because it's a lethal dose. But it's a mystery, as it was said before. We really don't know, because nobody would want to use a tablet like that.
You send this information, when you have it, through to a European sort of central base for sort of drugs monitoring in Lisbon,
yeah,
which then issues information to member states. And you also let sort of drugs charities know through informal routes in other countries.
Yeah.
And that brought some information over to the UK. But John, I wonder if you have any thoughts on how this information could have been acted on in England or in the rest of the UK, or how it was acted on.
I think there's something very unusual about the instances in the UK. The deaths, I believe, are pretty much confined to Lithuanians, Latvians and Poles. So I don't think these tablets have got into the general clubbing population. I think there's something unusual about the way these particular tablets have been brought into the United Kingdom.
But the information that the team in the Netherlands had about the existence of this tablet would have gone to a lot of other countries in Europe. Would you expect those countries to take action based purely on the information that a high-level, potentially lethal PMMA pill has been found? Or is that insufficient in its own to really do anything nationally?
Well, there's not much more you can do, really. All you can do is do pretty much what the Dutch do and just warn people that these things are dangerous. I mean, we do have a system similar to that here. The Welsh Assembly government funds a project called Wedinos, which does almost precisely the same thing. It analyses drugs on behalf of the public and publishes results on a website. And although that's run in Wales by the Welsh Assembly government, they will accept samples from the rest of the United Kingdom. So we do have similar mechanisms in place to analyse street drugs. But we've never had the appetite, I think, quite, or our politicians have never quite had the appetite to do it in quite the way the Dutch do. You know, they're not terribly keen to do anything which might be seen as condoning or encouraging the use of ecstasy and the other recreational drugs. Of course, that's not to say that doing this actually does, but I think that's the political dilemma in the UK. They don't want to be seen to be doing that.
There's almost an undercurrent that, and I may be bringing this to the table, so it's just my sort of suspicion is that there might even be a sense that if you're going to take illicit drugs, then you know the risks, and if bad things happen, then you know you've taken the decision for yourself.
Yes, I think that there might be an element of that. And of course, we do obtain pretty much the same information as the DIMS project, but we don't disseminate it to users in the way that they do. So we have projects that monitor the occurrence of new drugs as they come out on the drug abuse scene. And we have ways of communicating that to our law enforcement and healthcare agencies and our hospital A&E departments, and ultimately through to EMC DDA in Lisbon. But we don't analyse samples in England directly for members of the public.
It took a death in Suffolk to really alert the nation to PMMA in England. Can we not do better than that with what we have?
It's an unusual occurrence in any case, and I don't think these tablets are in the general population. We believe they're pretty much confined to the Latvian, Lithuanian, and Polish communities, and they are now very well aware that there's a problem.
Don, do you think that's the last you'll see of PMMA in the Netherlands for these high-level ones because people have learned about this, or do you think it's going to come back in another form?
Well, since we don't know why it's there in any way, so we don't really know whether it will occur again. Probably it will occur again. But you have to bear in mind that PMMA has been in ecstasy and other samples for quite some time, but usually at very low concentrations. This high, it was never this high as now. Probably for a while it will be off the market, but it's, you know, this is why it's good why we have this system, because we can see it immediately when it pops up somewhere in the country and people send in their samples. We will, you know, see it quite quickly after that, and we can warn again. But the problem will not be solved soon, we think, because it's on the market. It's been produced in the Netherlands as well, so it will continue for a while.
And John, just finally, in the UK, we've had deaths from PMMA before, not with such high level pills, but we've certainly had people die where the death's been attributed to PMMA. Why is that happening? Do you see that it's increasing? Why is that?
I don't think we've ever understood why PMMA exists. I don't understand why anybody would synthesize it. And I think we need our law enforcement agencies to find out more about why it exists. Is it to do with the availability of precursors, or are people deliberately making it? It seems unlikely that they would, because it's very well known to be toxic, particularly with the publicity it's getting now. I mean, just everybody will know these two compounds are toxic. So there doesn't seem to be any logical reason why anybody would want to make it and sell it. I mean, drug dealers don't want to poison their customers. You know, they want to make money. So it's not logical, and I think we need to understand why it exists in the first place.
John, if I could just ask you before I let you go, I mean, if there's anything you'd change about the UK system, what would you do?
Very difficult to say. I think the government is thinking about toying with some sort of communication back to users to do it in a slightly better way. We do test amnesty bins from clubs, and we do post information. There's an organisation called UK Drug Watch, which feeds information back to drug workers, drug professionals, and those networks work reasonably well. And Public Health England is consulting, I think, on how best to produce an information network which is responsive but isn't seen by the politicians to condone drug use. And I think that's the British dilemma. How do we do this without seeming to condone drug use?
Thanks to Dan van der Gouw and John Ramsey there.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simple yet powerful website building platform. As a Guardian podcast listener, it goes without saying that you're a clever clogs. The good news is that building your own professional website with Squarespace is easy. Whether the site you need is for a small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog, getting started takes seconds. Go to squarespace.com today and show support for this podcast and get 10% off. Use the offer code Guardian.
Let's look at some of the other science stories making the news this week. I'm joined by The Observer's science and technology editor, Robin McKee. Robin, we had an interesting one this week where the UK Space Agency sent us all an email saying they were having a press conference for Friday around an update on the Beagle 2 Mars lander that was basically lost in 2003 en route to Mars. We last saw it disappearing down to the red planet. Now, more than a decade later, they're going to issue an update. And I noticed that some of the people on the panel who were at the press conference work for HiRISE, the best camera for spotting lost craft on Mars. They've spotted Viking 1 and 2 and all the rest of it. What do we think is happening?
Well, I don't, they'll say they've definitely found it, but by all accounts, they've found something that could be it in the right error ellipse near where they thought it should have landed. I mean, given that we're talking that something's about the size of a, you know, the lid of a dustbin, you know, that's pretty good going, I've got to say. And yeah, it's always very nice to know what happened, what was happening. It was such a big story on Christmas Day that year, such a sad Boxing Day for all those involved in it. It'd be nice to know, you know, that it's a little bit of England down there. Sorry, a bit of Britain. What am I saying?
I had a talk with one of the scientists on the HiRISE camera, which is a really high-resolution camera on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter that's been there since 2006 or thereabouts. And they've been looking for Beagle 2, and they've spotted a lot of other landers that have been there. They've seen Curiosity and Spirit, the Mars rovers that are down there at the moment. And they were saying, well, we can get about, for one pixel, that will be about 25 centimetres on the surface. And Beagle 2 is about 95 centimetres across, intact, yeah, before launch. So if it landed in one piece and was perpendicular to their camera,
yeah, exactly,
then I guess you could have 4 pixels, perhaps, that might make up your Beagle 2.
If it was the right way, face up,
if it was facing exactly the right direction. But you have Beagle's mechanism of landing, which was slowing down through a parachute and then triple airbags when it landed, yes, if any of these deployed. But I think whether they found it or not, and by the time this podcast comes out, we should know the answer for sure. There's this question of, so what? You now know where your dead Beagle is. But I think, again, talking to space engineers, they were saying, well, you know what, as well as just it's nice to know what happened, is they can look to try and find out whether there is evidence that the parachute deployed, that the airbags deployed, and if it landed where it should have landed, so they can get some idea of whether, you know, navigation went pretty much okay, whether the parachute went okay, whether the airbags came out and inflated and so on. I mean, it's going to be rough science what they get from this, because if you don't see any airbags, it doesn't mean they didn't work. They may have just blown away in the Martian storm, I suppose. But it might give us a bit more information, I suppose.
Yeah, and it could very well suggest that, you know, it almost did it, which, of course, would be galling, really.
That would be really galling, actually, because it was done on such a shoestring.
Yes.
And had an awful lot of criticism, obviously. But if they were close, then I think people would be happier knowing that it failed outright, almost, wouldn't they?
Yes, yes. It was a no-go from the start.
Yeah,
Maybe not.
Anyway, moving on. Robin, what caught your eye last week?
Oh, well, there's a paper that appeared in this week's Nature about sea level rises, a vexed subject of at what rate are they rising. And initially, sort of, it suggested, this paper from these scientists who'd studied satellite data and tide gauges, etc., that, in fact, sea levels had risen far more slowly in the past between 1900 and 1990, which would suggest that we alarmists, as we're known, were wrong and really there wasn't a problem. But in fact, there was a sting in the tail to the story because it shows that, about 1.2 millimetre a year rise in oceans, not as much as anticipated. But now, in the last 20 years, it's jumped to 3 millimetres. So what we've got is we're getting an acceleration of sea level rise, and that is far more worrying, in fact, than what we thought before. Oceans are rising primarily because of thermal expansion. It's not so much the melting of the ice caps yet. By the ice caps, I mean, of course, those that are on land, as in Greenland and in Antarctica. That has still to come. Mostly it's thermal expansion, but now we're up to 3 millimetres a year. And if it's accelerating, then, who knows where it may end up.
So presumably this means some people have to go back and do some reforecasting.
Yes, indeed. And the IPCC reports have been notoriously vague or unwilling, to be fair to them, unwilling to take rash estimates about what sea level rises will mean and what they will do. At the end of the day, though, it's sea level rises that will really do the damage, the first damage when we get it, global warming gets a grip, because, billions of people live in areas of the land that will be flooded with a metre or 2 metres of sea level rise.
That's all we have for you this week. A big thank you to Dan van der Gouw, John Ramsey and Robin McKee. From me, Ian Sample, and all the science team, thanks for listening.